They bring him through the door just after midday. The room is small, bare, fluorescent. This is supposed to be intake, not jail, not punishment. He is in crisis, unsteady, loud, confused. He does not know where to sit. He does not understand why the uniforms are still here. Voices rise, chairs scrape, a deputy moves closer, then another, hands reach, the floor comes fast. Seven bodies press down, weight stacks on weight. Minutes pass, cameras keep rolling. Someone says stop resisting, someone says hold him, someone says nothing at all. The clock keeps moving. A man who walked in breathing is now still. No cuffs come off, no one lifts him right away. A nurse looks down and hesitates. A deputy shifts his knee. By the time help is called, the room has already changed. This is no longer intake. This is a scene that cannot be undone. Outside the walls, the system will explain itself. Inside the room, the damage is already done. Chapter 1, Intake Under Watch. March 6, 2023 begins without warning at Central State Hospital in Dinwiddie County, Virginia. The intake area sits behind secured doors, plain and functional. Fluorescent lights hum overhead. The space is designed for assessment, not force. A place where people in crisis are supposed to slow down, not be pinned. Just after midday, a transport vehicle arrives from the local jail. Deputies escort Ervo Otieno inside. He is 28 years old. He is in the middle of a documented mental health crisis. This is not his first transfer. It is supposed to be a step toward treatment. The deputies do not leave. Otieno is brought into an intake room with chairs arranged loosely along the wall. Hospital staff stand nearby. A nurse waits with paperwork. The deputies remain close, their presence heavy in the room. Body-worn cameras are active. A fixed surveillance camera watches from above. Otieno moves around the room. He talks, he gestures. His voice carries frustration and confusion. He does not settle into a chair when asked. His movements are restless, uneven. This is not violent behavior, it is agitation, the kind that brings people here in the first place. The deputies reposition. One stands in front of him, another moves to his side. The hospital staff do not intervene. The balance of authority in the room has already tilted. A deputy reaches for Otieno. Words are exchanged, the tone sharpens. Otieno pulls back, the distance collapses. Hands grab clothing and arms. The first push sends Otieno off balance. He stumbles, then goes down hard. The floor takes him face first. The sound is dull and final. Within seconds, more deputies pile in. Seven deputies surround Otieno on the ground, knees press into his back. Weight settles across his shoulders and torso. Arms are pulled behind him. His legs are pinned. His face is turned toward the floor. The cameras keep recording. Otieno struggles beneath the weight. His movements are frantic at first, then uneven. His voice breaks into short bursts. He says he cannot breathe. The words are audible. No one backs off. The restraint continues. Minutes pass, not seconds, not a momentary hold. The pressure does not ease. Deputies shift positions but do not release. One places a knee higher, another leans forward. The combined weight stays constant. Hospital staff remain in the room. No one orders the deputies to stop. No one steps in front of the cameras. The intake process has frozen, replaced by control. Otieno's movements slow. The phrase "stop resisting" is spoken. It repeats, it fills the room. But Otieno's resistance is no longer clear. His legs stop kicking, his arms slacken, his head remains pressed to the floor. The deputies stay on top of him. A nurse looks down, there is hesitation. The nurse does not immediately check for a pulse. The deputies maintain their positions. Time stretches in the silence between commands. Otieno becomes unresponsive. His body no longer pushes back, his voice is gone. The cameras capture stillness where movement had been constant moments earlier. The restraint continues even after the change is visible. Eventually, someone notices. A deputy shifts weight and looks down. Another adjusts position. The pressure remains, but the energy in the room shifts. Confusion replaces urgency. A medical emergency is finally declared. Staff move in closer. Otieno is rolled partially to the side. His face is visible now. He does not react. His chest does not rise in a way that reassures anyone watching. Attempts are made to revive him. The effort is late. The room feels crowded and empty at the same time. Orders are given, but they lack direction. The chain of command is unclear. The deputies step back only after it is undeniable that something has gone wrong. Otieno is eventually pronounced dead. The intake room does not look different. The chairs are still in place. The lights do not flicker. The cameras never stopped recording. but the purpose of the space has been destroyed. This was not a jail cell. It was not a street encounter. It was a mental health intake at a state hospital. The presence of 7 deputies during a civil commitment intake raises immediate questions, but those questions will come later. In the moment, there is only the fact that a man who arrived alive is now gone. No one in the room announces blame. No one acknowledges error. The system moves into its next phase instinctively. Reports are written, statements are taken. The language shifts from action to documentation. The deputies leave the room one by one. Otieno's body is removed. The intake process ends without ever truly beginning. Outside the hospital, no one knows yet. There are no crowds, no cameras from the outside world, no statements from officials. The death exists only within the walls and the footage captured inside them. For now, it is treated as an incident. The hospital resumes operations. Intake continues for others. The room is cleaned. The chairs are reset. The fluorescent lights remain unchanged. What happened inside is already sealed into evidence. Every movement, every minute, every decision to stay on top of a man who said he could not breathe. The question is not yet about guilt or accountability. It is simpler and more disturbing. How did a place meant for care become the site of lethal restraint? And why did no one stop it when there was still time? Chapter 2, What the Evidence Shows. The investigation begins where the intake ended. Video, timestamps, medical findings, the evidence does not argue or speculate, it records. The medical examiner conducts an autopsy within days. The findings are direct. Irvo Otieno died from asphyxia related to restraint. The manner of death is ruled a homicide. There is no indication of a natural cause that explains the loss of life. There is no fatal injury unrelated to the restraint. The conclusion is tied to pressure, positioning, and duration. Toxicology testing is completed, substances are identified, but none are listed as the primary cause of death. The report does not attribute the outcome to overdose. The cause remains mechanical. Weight, compression, inability to breathe. Investigators reconstruct the timeline using synchronized footage from body-worn cameras and the hospital's fixed surveillance system. The restraint lasts several minutes. The exact length is documented second by second. This is not a brief loss of control. This is sustained pressure applied long after Otieno is on the ground. The video shows when his movements change. It shows when his voice stops. It shows how long the deputies remain on top of him after that point. The shift from struggle to stillness is visible. The response does not change fast enough. Investigators note that Otieno is face down for a prolonged period. His torso is compressed. Multiple deputies apply body weight simultaneously. Training materials reviewed later warn against this positioning, especially for individuals in mental health crisis. Those warnings are not abstract. They are written plainly. Statements are taken from hospital staff. Intake personnel describe confusion and hesitation. They state that deputies controlled the physical interaction. Staff members do not report issuing a command to stop the restraint. They do not report stepping in physically. Deputies give their own accounts. They describe Otieno as resisting. They describe attempts to control him. They describe concern for safety. These statements are compared against the footage. The footage does not show a weapon. It does not show Otieno striking staff. It does not show an attempt to escape the facility. It shows movement, agitation, and resistance under restraint. The distinction matters. Prosecutors review the evidence in stages, the autopsy, the video, the training standards, the statements, the timeline is laid out without commentary. The question becomes unavoidable. Was the force used reasonable, and was it maintained after the threat had passed? A grand jury process is initiated. The case does not move quietly. The video exists. It cannot be summarized away. It must be shown. Charges are filed against the 7 deputies involved in the restraint. Each is charged individually, not as a group. The charges reflect prosecutors' conclusion that the actions taken meet the legal standard for criminal responsibility. The filing of charges marks a shift. The case is no longer an internal review. It is no longer administrative. It enters the criminal system with the same gravity as any other homicide. Defense attorneys respond quickly. They argue that deputies were following protocol. They argue that Otieno's condition contributed to the outcome. They argue that the restraint was necessary to maintain safety. These arguments are framed carefully. They are not verdicts. Prosecutors respond with evidence, not rhetoric. They point to duration. They point to positioning. They point to the moment Otieno became unresponsive. They point to the failure to immediately render aid. Training manuals are introduced into the record. They address prone restraint. They warn of positional asphyxia. They emphasize constant monitoring and rapid disengagement once control is achieved. These documents are not obscure. They are standard. The footage is reviewed again, frame by frame. Investigators note opportunities to reduce force, moments when weight could have been lifted, moments when a medical assessment could have been prioritized. Those moments pass. The system's language becomes precise. Words like incident are replaced with terms like restraint-related death. The tone shifts from procedural to prosecutorial. Public officials are briefed. The case draws attention beyond the county. The presence of video makes containment impossible. What happened in the intake room is now a matter of public record. Still, the legal process moves slowly. Charges are filed, but outcomes are not immediate. Court dates are scheduled, motions are prepared. The case enters its long phase. The evidence does not change during this time. The video does not soften. The autopsy does not revise itself. The timeline remains fixed. What remains unresolved is how responsibility will be distributed, whether the system will treat this as a failure of individuals, a failure of training, or something designed to absorb loss without consequence. By the end of the evidence phase, one fact stands uncontested. Irvo Otieno died while restrained by deputies in a mental health facility. The cause is known, the manner is known, the sequence is documented. The question now is not what happened, it is what the system will do with what it knows. Chapter 3, Fallout and Accountability. The case does not end with the charges, it widens. Court appearances begin months after Irvo Otieno's death. The deputies enter one by one, no longer as a unit, but as individual defendants. Each has counsel. Each faces the same central fact, but the legal paths begin to separate. Some plead not guilty, others signal potential plea discussions. The courtroom language is restrained, procedural. There are no raised voices. No grand speeches. The weight of the case sits in what does not need to be said. The video exists. Everyone in the room knows it. As hearings progress, the footage is released publicly. The surveillance video and body camera recordings move beyond court filings and into the public domain. The release is deliberate and complete. It shows the restraint from start to finish. It shows the duration. It shows the stillness. The reaction is immediate. Civil rights organizations call for federal review. State leaders issue statements acknowledging the seriousness of the case. Mental health advocates point to the setting, a hospital intake room, a civil commitment, not a jail cell. The family of Irvo Otieno speaks through attorneys and public statements. They describe a son who needed care and received force instead. Their words are measured but firm. They call the death preventable. They call the restraint excessive. They demand accountability. A civil rights investigation is announced at the federal level. The scope includes the hospital, the sheriff's office, and the policies governing restraint of people in mental health crisis. This process runs parallel to the criminal case. It does not replace it. Administrative actions follow. Hospital staff involved in the intake are placed under review. Deputies are removed from duty. Internal investigations begin separate from the criminal proceedings. The language used is careful. No conclusions are announced. The system protects itself while it examines itself. Public demonstrations take place outside courthouses and government buildings. The protests are not chaotic. They are focused. Signs reference Otieno's name. Speakers reference the video. The message is consistent. This did not have to happen. State officials announce reviews of restraint policies. Committees are formed. Training protocols are re-examined. These actions are presented as corrective, but they do not undo what has already occurred. The criminal cases move forward unevenly. Some defendants negotiate plea agreements, others prepare for trial. Each decision carries consequences, not only for the individuals involved, but for the precedent the case may set. Legal arguments sharpen. Defense teams emphasize stress, uncertainty, and perceived threat. Prosecutors return to the same evidence each time. Duration, positioning, failure to disengage, failure to render immediate aid. The core of the case does not shift. As months pass, the public attention does not fade. The setting keeps the case alive, a mental health facility, a place meant to stabilize, not restrained to death. National comparisons are made. Other restraint-related deaths are referenced in media coverage. The pattern is not presented as identical, but the similarities are difficult to ignore. Prone positioning, multiple officers, extended duration, delayed medical response. The system is forced to answer questions it often avoids. Why were 7 deputies present during a civil intake? Why hospital staff did not assert authority? Why restraint continued after resistance appeared to stop? Why medical intervention was delayed? Some answers come in fragments, others remain unresolved. By the close of the series timeline, the criminal cases have not all reached final resolution. Some outcomes are known, others remain pending. The process continues, as the law often does, slower than public demand. What is clear is the cost. Irvo Otieno is dead. His death is recorded, reviewed, and litigated. His name is now tied permanently to a case that exposes the consequences of force applied without restraint. The intake room still exists, patients still enter it, policies may change, training may evolve, but the footage remains fixed in time. Immune to revision. Accountability, when it comes, does not arrive cleanly. It arrives in filings, hearings, plea agreements, and administrative actions. It arrives unevenly and often too late to feel complete. The final weight of the case rests not only on verdicts or sentences, but on a quieter question that lingers beyond courtrooms. When a system built to manage crisis chooses control over care, how many warnings must be ignored before the cost becomes undeniable? Irvo Otieno's death answers that question with permanence.